Let's see if that does it. There we go. Our production manager finally got his thoughts together and turned on all of the correct programs and computers and stuff like that. So, boys and girls, moms and dads, old people, young people,
all ages,
middle people, left people, right people, all kinds of people. Robert, Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert and chair across from me. I went down this morning to North Fort Myers and checking out the new store. And yes, we have a store opening sometime in August in North Fort Myers. It'll be right on 41, north of the bridge, a couple miles, kind of right by Northern Tool there. Actually, first building south of Northern Tool, an old gas station building. We're going to be opening there sometime in August. We were down there measuring and getting ready to start building rod racks and pegboard stuff. So that's going to be interesting.
It's going to be fun.
What the heck was I thinking? Let's see, just bang my head up against a wall.
Just like glutton for a punishment.
Moron, yeah. I don't know what the heck I was thinking with that. But yeah, it's 21 miles south of us. And opening the store is kind of the neat part, but now I got to do all of the Fort Myers boat ramps and all the fishing spots and all the rest of the stuff down there for the website. So that's
quite a huge expansion.
It's going to keep me busy for months.
Oh, yes.
So anyway, yeah, we will be there with the proverbial bells and tinkles on. Yes. Hey, okay. So anyway, things around here. Port Charlotte, been kind of getting a little different. Just taking a quick, I don't know why, but my internet connection just, it went from pretty good to, I'm slightly faster than a Model T on here now. I don't know what's up with that.
It was funny, our computer wouldn't work the other day, but our cell phones were getting perfect internet service in the house.
Yeah.
But the computer, we even rebooted it, the whole nine yards, but the computer said no.
Yeah, and we're doing Tarpon Talk stuff, little Tarpon things that are just exclusive about Tarpon on the Tarpon page, and I'm putting them up on here. The first one, for some reason, I mean, we had about a 40-minute show with me and Robert, Josh, Olive, and it, for some reason, it didn't take. I don't know what happened to it, but I ended up having to take the link off because, yes, you're right, guys, it only lasted like 40 seconds, and I have no idea what, and I couldn't find it. Just double checking the Peace River graph, and to let you know, it's been holding steady at about 5.5 feet, so that's about a 3.5 foot thing of water coming at us with 1,270 cubic feet a second. So it's not as bad as it was, but it's still not great. I don't know. But for this time of year, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. It's a lot lower than what I thought it'd be. I figured it'd still be up there with all the rain they've been getting inland and everything.
Right.
You would think it'd be up there like that 8-foot mark.
Yeah, I really would. I mean, I've been watching the storms go across, and they've been hitting the Peace River Basin, but it's just not bringing the water level up.
Yeah.
It's down from 11.
Not that we're
feet.
Complaining.
No. This is all good. But we need that freshwater flow in the summertime. I guess let's jump onto the Peace River, start the report there.
Sounds good.
You know, wife is calling. Okay. My wonderful flip phone. You know when you drop a $200 phone and it breaks?
Yep.
And I had that for not quite a year. And then I bought a $400 phone, and I had that for what? About a month when it broke?
Maybe if you're lucky.
Maybe a month.
Who makes a phone out of glass?
Yeah, glass.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Really?
So I just said, that's it. I bought a $25 flip phone. I can call people.
And drop it.
And I can drop it, yeah. And if it breaks, it's $25. Could I buy another one? I mean, I forget how many I could buy for $400, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't do the radar and everything, but I can ask other people on the boat. Yeah, you got you spent $800 on a phone. Tell me what the weather's going to be. You know?
I can't. I got to dig it out of this deep waterproof box.
Yeah, so. And so anyway, back to the fishing river. Peace River. We've got some tarpon up there. Snook population's growing by the day up on the river. Seeing a lot more snook up there. Haven't seen a whole lot of just schooling fish. Was looking out on the river the other day. There must be some blue crabs up there. Got some crab boats working the river. So, obviously, I think that's what the tarpon and the black drum up around I-75 are up there for, is that blue crab thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always a good idea, you know, when you're looking around, if you do see those stone crab, or not stone crab, blue crab pots, you know, that's usually a pretty good indication that they've moved up there. And it surprised me that it took them this long, I guess, because since finally the river stabilized at that 5-foot mark, those crabs have really started to migrate up that area.
And they're migrating up or migrating down?
I think with all the rain we had, though, all winter long, I think it would have pushed a lot of those crabs out.
I don't know. Normally I would agree with you and say, yep, but I got no clue. I wish I did. But getting down between 41 and I-75, you got a lot of early morning tarpon, you got a lot of snook around 41. There's some back up around I-75. A lot of redfish on the docks along the northern side of the river from Rolls Landing all the way up to the 41 bridge. A decent bunch of redfish. One of the tournaments they held, about 6-8 of the boats never left. They went from just right across the bridge to Port Charlotte side and just started working there and
fished a whole 2-mile area.
Yep. And first place came from just south of Ponce de Leon.
Nice.
So, you know, there's a lot of redfish up in the upper harbor here. Getting around to the Port Charlotte canals, a little bit of sand bream.
Some oddball schools of jacks of assorted sizes, mostly on the smaller side.
Oddball schools of jacks, mostly on the oddball smaller side.
Smaller side.
I just figured if you were repeating, I should repeat. I didn't know we were on repeat Thursdays.
Right.
Today, Thursday?
Yes.
Yes, okay. All right. So, anyway, fishing in the canals, it's okay right now, but I wouldn't say great. Did you have any luck?
I caught a couple little peanut snook behind the house, but, you know, and I'm hearing of some bigger ones down by the mouths of the canals, and some of the guys trolling as they're going out have been picking up some assorted sizes of snook. I've heard of a couple redfish over towards the Manchester and Ackerman waterway that guys have been catching as they've been just kind of putzing along and catching them on jigs and frozen shrimp, working them real slow along the bottom and along the bushes.
Slow bouncing.
Yeah. Nothing consistent, but fishable.
Take a shrimp and you take the head off, and live shrimp, dead shrimp, doesn't matter, and then thread the tail over the hook of the jig, whether it's a bucktail or just a regular jig head or a Rockport rattler head. Oh, and you do not have to use circle hooks up in the harbor or in Florida everywhere. Circle hook rule applies to reef fish.
Reef.
Which is snappers, grouper, stuff like that. It does not apply to the trout, redfish, snook, cobia, tarpon, fish like that. It only applies to bottom fishing. And only the state of Florida could come up with a rule and says, well, if you're going to catch and release, use whatever hook you want. But we think circle hooks are better for catch and release. So if you're going to keep them to eat, you have to use a circle hook.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a very poorly written law.
It's Florida.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Yeah, I know.
And circle hooks are not great. They're good and they have their purpose, but not for all purposes.
No.
But the reason that the whole circle hook thing comes into play is because if you're putting the shrimp tail on a jig head, then you cannot keep a mangrove snapper or grouper with it, because those have to be done with a circle hook if you have any kind of bait on them. Now, you can use a J hook, a standard jig, as long as you do not have any kind of natural bait on it. Like if you're out in the Gulf and you're bottom fishing, you want to use a bucktail or a plastic tail jig head, you can put gulp on, you can put fish bites, you know, there's a lot of stuff. Uncle Josh pork rinds actually work really good. But you cannot put squid, shrimp, fish, anything like that on that hook, because at that point you have to use a circle hook. It's the law comes into effect once you put bait with it.
Yeah, in conjunction with natural bait.
any kind of natural bait, live or dead. So if you're using jig heads up in the harbor and you want to do it for snook, you can put your shrimp on there. Actually works great, gives you a nice scented tail. And I would actually put a couple on the live well seat and let them get a little ripe before you stick them on your jig head. The more smell, the better.
Absolutely.
So J hooks are fine in any case as long as you don't have bait on them. It doesn't matter. You can catch grouper, snapper, any fish with them. But as soon as you put natural bait on, all your grouper, snapper, you know, Gulf bottom fish. And the weird part about it is that law is in effect whether you're fishing in the Gulf or in a canal or on the harbor. It's the species, not where you're fishing for them.
Right. So reef species.
Yeah. If you catch a mangrove snapper in the harbor and you're using a J-hook, technically you have to let it go. You're not allowed to keep it because you weren't using the proper catch and release hook. Okay. It just sounds so weird when you say it out loud.
Even when you read it, it reads weird.
Get this pain right between my eyes and my forehead there. It's just, it hurts right back in there. Okay. Yeah, I'm not too bright, but I mean, I can tell you that that's ridiculous. Let's just let people use whatever hook they want and go from there.
Right.
You know, because I'm good with a J hook. I don't like circle hooks. I hate them. I can't get them out of the fish is the problem.
Right, exactly.
If I could get them out of the fish, I wouldn't have an issue with it.
It was designed as a catch and keep hook. You know, commercial fishermen have been using it for years. Since Polynesians been using it for thousands of years
or something. You know, so they're not new.
It's a catch and keep. They did it to sustain life. You know?
Well, they did it to make sure the fish don't come off the hook.
Right.
So they don't get off. With a J hook, they can actually get off the hook, but with a circle hook, they can't. So self-setting and keeps the fish on the hook. So that way the commercial guys didn't lose any fish.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I don't know why they use J hooks in the U.S. I guess, you know, the U.S. has a hard time blending itself to new ideas.
Yeah.
Speaking of a new idea, let's continue with the fishing report. There'd be a novel idea.
There's a good segue.
Back
on track.
Yeah, do what we're supposed to be doing, a fishing report. Okay. So anyway, we did that. Alligator Bay over at Port Charlotte Beach. You might find a cobia, but some snook underneath the dock.
Some mangrove snapper, oddball incidental small black tip or sharp nose.
Yeah, some sand brim. So moving around up by the Mayaca cutoff, you heard anything over in there?
I've not heard anything up inside the cutoff, but right at the mouth on both entrances, I've heard of a few redfish being caught. A couple oddball trout, which was weird. You know, I know you hear about them regularly, but you're more used to hearing them down on the southern part. But he got into a few trout, and then right there around the Mayaca side of the Hog Island, a guy skipped a bunch of pompano, but only hooked one. So, you know, just not a lot up in there. I think it's just too warm. I mean, everyone's telling me they're seeing 90 to 93 degrees on their temperature anywhere in different spots in the harbor.
Yeah, surface temps are high.
Yeah.
So,
dark water.
Yeah, that's what happens when you get brown water and hot sunlight. Yeah. And we didn't have the cloud cover for the last few days.
Yeah, exactly.
We've had a lot of cloud cover this year up until this point. And now we're getting a lot of sunny days, and then we get the storms in the afternoon, intermittent. You know, yesterday I drove from my house down to North Fort Myers, and I went I-75 down to Tucker's Grade and, you know, went in North Fort Myers on 41, then came back up 41. I hit the same rainstorms going down and coming back in the same places.
Really?
Yeah. It was raining just south of Punta Gorda down by TGA.
Yeah.
And, you know, between TGA and Punta Gorda, it was raining. Not north of there, not south of there. And it took me a while to drive down there, you know, my Les Paul bass worked on, and I went to pick it up and then came back up, and I'll be darned, it was still raining the same places, hadn't moved.
That's funny.
It's just weird because the rain here always moves, right? Goes somewhere, but these, and it was from I-75 all the way down to 41. It was just a spot of rain. You could go north or south, it would go from rain to drizzle to mist to sunny. both sides. Weird.
Yeah.
So, anyway, anything around Elgin Bean, Mayaca River, the mouth of the river, some sporadic tarpon and sharks coming up into there.
Yeah, and that's been starting to pick up this whole week, getting mixed reports right there. And then as you get up towards Eljo Bean, at night there's been some tarpon there and quite a few snook of assorted sizes. And then during the daytime, I'm hearing just one day is really good and the next 2 days are kind of crappy. And I think that's that typical summertime pattern with the fresh water, that there's no consistency to it. You could go there and clean up on the mangrove snapper, black drum, and even an oddball redfish or trout, and then go back for the next 2 days, same weather, same tide, and not catch anything. But I think some of that has to do with the flows coming out of the river from the inland rains is the only thing I can kind of put a theory on.
Yeah, it couldn't just be, you know, who knows? I mean, at this point in this game, I don't know. I just can't figure it out. But right. Anyway, let's move down the west wall. As long as we don't understand anything, let's just keep the understanding not happening.
There you go.
And Trout Creek, redfish, snook, got occasional some other fish in it. But as you head down the west wall, that holds true down all the way down to Cape Hayes.
Yeah.
The redfish seem to be more dotted along the shorelines. The snook seem to be more into the creeks and stuff. But they both could be almost anywhere.
Yeah, I think the key thing with any of those fish right now is moving water. So try to find yourself where you got some of those creeks pouring out and creating a little bit more water flow along that shoreline. Seems to be holding more consistent numbers of the redfish and the snook, at least feeding fish.
And they're going up in the creeks on the incoming, coming out on the outgoing. It's just the a very standard pattern. Anything happening out on the sandbar there on the west side?
On top of the bar itself, or on top of this? As you, my brain's not working. We're both shot today.
Oh no, I'm fine. You're lost. I was fine. I said anything happening on top of the bar.
On top of the bar.
And you said on top of the bar? Okay. Now, just a minute while we reset Robert. Okay. Hang on.
Frontal lobe lobotomy.
Yeah. I mean, there ought to be something that we could do to get this fixed. And I think the best thing to do is just do a, like you do in the computer, a reboot.
Yeah.
And so, all right, let's
turn them off, turn them back on.
All right, there. Now we've got that part of your anatomy cleaned back out. A brain dump. So,
right.
Okay, on there top the bar, is there any fish on the west side of the harbor? Not so much on the flats or up against the mangroves, but over where the bar comes up to make it a very shallow place before you get to the open water.
Yes, there's been some pompano. Not great.
All that for, yes, there's been some pompano. Okay, yeah. Cape Hayes, please.
No, there's also been a few oddball trout over there. And then a lot of little bonnethead sharks.
Now, what
cruising
makes
up
them
there?
An oddball? Are they rounder or different than were they oblong ball fish?
No, because it's not anything consistent.
Okay.
You'll catch one, and then maybe two, and then you might move 100 yards
See,
before you catch
girls,
another
aren't
one.
Aren't you glad you don't work for me?
No consistency. How's that?
Okay. We have inconsistent fish.
Yes.
All right. So, Cape Hayes.
Cape Hayes, all on the back side of it, basically on the harbor side of the Cape Hayes bar. There's been some bonnetheads, an oddball pompano, ladyfish. As you move out a little bit further towards the marker five out there, there's been some Spanish mackerel, a lot of assorted little sharks, and tarpon have been moving in and out of there sporadically, but not consistent. They seem to be out just a little bit further than that and up. But if you work the edge of Cape Hayes going towards the entrance into Turtle Bay, that's where they seem to be picking up a few more consistent trout, bonnethead, Spanish mackerel, ladyfish, even some mangrove snapper throughout there. So it's been kind of a good variety.
Okay. Well, let's see. Still some nice redfish at the mouth of Turtle Bay. They seem to be kind of going along the outside there over to Bull Bay, back up in. If you're looking for redfish up inside, I don't think I would go too far in. I think it's a bit warm back there. The snooks seem to be still going back up in the way back from the clam lease and back up amongst the islands, but not as much on the redfish.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been hearing too. Seems like the redfish are definitely hanging along the out perimeters of the edges of the islands. You know, and underneath the shacks there, I've had a couple reports right there at the first couple shacks right inside Bull Bay. Had some mangrove snapper. A guy got into some big black drum off of there too, and some small little, you know, what I would consider better eating size black drum, you know, in that 16 to 24 inch range. Not real giants. And then I've heard of a couple big sharks cruising around in there on the flats, so I don't know what they're looking for, but a couple guys have been kind of cutting through from one side to the other and saying they're seeing, you know, 5 and 6 foot sharks cruising there sporadically through there.
I needed to crack the whip, yeah. So I'm getting that. So next time you get out of line, I'll be able to crack the whip.
There you go. Yeah. Perfect.
You know, nice just to get one. You know, I have the whip. I should have the sound to go with it.
Perfect.
Okay. So anyway, upper end Gasparilla Sound, devilfish. Any bait showing up by devilfish at all?
There's some little stuff out there, and it's just, it's not very big.
You know,
and I'm not, you know, the way the bait fish have been the last couple of years, these guys going out and throwing their quarter inch. I even had a guy ask for an 1/8 inch mesh net the other day because he said the bait's really small out there. And it's frustrating sometimes when these guys go out and just want to kill all this bait and they wonder why there's no bait around. They don't even give it a chance to breed once.
Well, you know, I go through the same thing with shrimp. Right now you command, and there's probably an 8 out of 10 chance we're going to have shrimp. But, you know, 20-30% chance, I did not buy tiny peewee shrimp.
Right.
Because, well, I have two choices. One, I can have people mad at me because I'm out of shrimp, which doesn't really cost me anything extra. Or two, I can have people mad at me because I have little tiny shrimp. And it's summertime, it's called peewee shrimp season, because shrimp don't live in the harbors and bays, and you cannot get shrimp from more than, you know, really once you get over 10 feet, you're pushing the limits. By the time you get up to 20, they're going to die. If you catch them, you know, drag them up off the bottom, bring them in, they're going to be dead.
Right.
So, you know, I would like to see the shrimp get every chance to breed once, spawn once, before they're caught and brought in for bait or for food or anything else. So I have a real hard time with it. But economically, I have to buy at least a little bit.
Right.
So, but every year, 32 years, I've been dealing with this question of should I buy the tiny shrimp or shouldn't I? And we always end up having to buy them because people get really mad at you when you don't have any shrimp.
Right. But even when you try to explain it to them the way you just did, they still sometimes just don't get it.
You know, and it's hard because you don't make as much money on the tiny ones. Everybody's like, why are you charging me this much? Well, actually more expensive because we have quarter inch holes that we use for filters on the pumps, where it draws the water out to spray it back in to keep the air, the water moving and air into it and everything. And some of them actually get sucked up in the pump.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're so small. And then it's just ridiculous. But they don't want to use dead bait. So they want something live, and I don't know. And the truth is, they do catch fish. I mean, they really do work. Those tiny shrimp, I've sometimes had one of the best redfish days I've ever had, and I don't think I had one shrimp over 2 inches long.
Well, it's matching the hatch. I mean, we've talked about that a million different times. It's what's out there. You know, there's a ton of baby shrimp out there. They get focused on feeding on that, too. You know, but the other thing is, you know, they also eat the frozen stuff just as readily, if not more so.
Well, when the water's this dark, they're not going to be able to see that live shrimp jumping around or kicking. And if you've got any kind of wind or wave, it's harder for them to hear the vibration of the movement of a live shrimp. And the smell makes a big difference. We tell people this time of year, dead bait is actually better than live bait for most of your fish.
Right.
Whether it's a cut up piece of crab, a cut up ladyfish, mullet, sardines, threadfin, whatever it is, or dead shrimp. That's why I tend to leave them on the, I always have a couple, I leave the majority of them cold so they stay pretty good. But I take a couple out and let them get a little warm, just start turning a little bit red or pink or orange or whatever you want to call it, and it enhances the smell.
Big time.
So, anyway, back onto that, we were talking about Gasparilla. Gasparilla Flat. Are there any redfish out in that open flat out there, the tailing flats?
I've heard of a few redfish there, especially around that little oyster bar over there heading into towards Widden Creek.
Right.
There's been some redfish there, and then up towards the, I don't even know what that island is called, where the white pelicans always go every year.
Sandfly, maybe?
Yeah, there you go.
Might be sandfly. But yeah. Anyway, crossed over in Gaspereau Island, Boca Grande, there's quite a bit of fish along the docks over there.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of good reports on that side, the Boca Bayou, the Three Sisters, all that. There's trout, Spanish mackerel, a lot of little sharks, black drum, redfish. I mean, you name it, a lot of little gag grouper. I mean, guys are catching 20 and 21-inch gag grouper. A couple guys have been catching some legal ones, but, you know, they're throwing up under a dock anticipating a mangrove snapper, and they're getting railed by a 20-inch gag grouper. I mean, that's awesome in 4 feet of water.
When people don't realize how hard a grouper actually fights until you catch them in shallow water.
Yeah.
It was amazing the difference in when you're offshore. But then again, you usually got a lot heavier tackle when you're offshore.
Yeah, using 50-pound test line and catching
a 20-inch
fish.
But it's straight down, you know. But when you catch them out away from you and you're trying to fight them back, very aggressive fish. And they don't get the bends. They don't get that, you know, going from, say, 60 feet up to 40 feet, and then they just lose their fight because they're all bloated up.
Right.
They fight all the way back to the boat.
They're fun.
If they would learn to jump, they'd be another good fish. It's like if I could teach Jack Crevel how to jump, if they would just do, straight up out of the water and flopping thing, it'd be the number one most protected game fish in Florida.
Yeah, I was telling a customer about that yesterday. He was a newbie to the air and hadn't caught one yet, and just trying to explain to him how phenomenal of a fight they are.
Mm-hmm. An 8-10-inch Jack Crevel feels like 15, 18 inches of any other fish.
Yeah.
It's astounding. If you get lucky and get one close to 10 pounds, hang on, you better hope you got 200-300 yards of line.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have most of it before you start getting them back.
It's pretty awesome.
So, anyway, Placida, what's going on around the trestle?
Placida's been weird during the day. Guys have been catching some really nice whiting, like pound and a quarter whiting off of there, with a few trout and some bonnethead sharks. But it seems like the evening bite has been a little bit better, and I don't know if it's because of the tides or what, but the guys have been catching some better mangrove snapper, an oddball redfish, couple varieties of sharks. And then there's been a lot of snook out there for catch and release purposes. You know, it's been a good mix match, but it's been that just right at sunset kind of thing as that sea breeze starts to lay down.
So, if you're going to go up along the intercoastal, right out in front of the Placida boat ramp, you got some nice fishing along that area, a little bit of trout, some of those sennets, that fake barracuda, which is weird. But as you say, you could run into some small grouper, possible trout, a lot of redfish back along the edges of that bay. But heading up the intercoastal, have you heard anything about Palm Island Ferry and the snook?
There's been a lot of snook there at night. I've had a couple customers have been fly fishing some of those docks at night that are lit up and catching a good variety of sizes of snook off of them. One customer caught an actual legal gag. He caught a 25-inch gag while fly fishing for snook. He was super excited. So kind of a mixed bag of stuff there.
Cool. Getting into Lemon Bay, Stump Pass, that area up there?
That's been a lot more productive for bigger trout. Not as many numbers of them, but there's been some 18, 20, 21-inch trout being caught up in there. A lot of little bonnet heads. A few black tips have been cruising around on top of the flat. I guess the mullet has really started to move around. There's a lot of I would consider them just a little bit bigger than finger mullet. A guy was saying that he's seeing like those 6-7-inch mullet swimming around in there and schooling up.
We actually used to call them Peter mullet.
Peter mullet?
Yeah, that was because they're bigger than the finger.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. But that actually was what they were called.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, those are starting to school up a little bit down there, and I don't know if they're just getting pushed out because of all the fresh water moving up into the canals or it's just that time of year, but been hearing more reports this last week about the mullet down there. What else has been going on? Been a few Spanish mackerel and a few bluefish as guys have been trolling along through that miserable mile and just staying in the channel, just kind of piddling around. You know, not serious fishermen, just out there to kind of enjoy the day before the thunderstorms come around.
We were talking about that. One of the boat salesmen, the store we're opening in North Fort Myers is because of a boat dealer. Gary Ingman is opening a store down there, and he wants us to put the tackle shop in there. So, you know, we agreed and worked out a very, you know, good deal. And we were talking about pleasure boaters. And when this guy was asking, you know, we do a lot of pleasure boaters. I said, well, we do too. Because they don't like to sit in one spot and wait for a fish to bite. Right. But they like to move the boat around. I said, well, and we set up a lot of people to go trolling from pleasure boats.
Right.
Because, you know, all you need is, you know, one or two rod holders. Throw a rod out the back, and you can kind of idle along and enjoy the boating, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's a fish.
Yeah. So many people associate trolling with going offshore for dolphin or sailfish or some elaborate tropical destination species. Okay. But
the canals, the harbor, anywhere you go that you're going slow, you control.
Yeah. There's so many species here that'll hit and just have a fun time with and bend the rod. Just way underrated. Way underutilized, really.
Yeah, I mean, trolling's cool, and it's something a pleasure boater can do without having to, you know, sit in one spot or anchor up or drift. You know, you can just idle the boat along and catch some fish.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Getting back around out along the barrier islands, let's walk the beach. If pretend we were going to walk along a beach in Englewood, Sanibel, Cayo Costa, Captiva, Gasparilla. If we're walking the beach, what would you expect to catch? Or is there a difference if you're northern or south?
No, they're all pretty consistent. As you get closer to the passes, it seems to be a better concentration of fish. But if you're a little bit further away from the passes, like, say, Inglewood Beach or Venice Beach, someplace like that, the whiting have been really incredible. You know, once again, pound and a quarter fish. A few jacks cruising the beach.
Somebody was talking about some schools of trout work along the beach.
Yeah, every year for some reason they move out along the beach, but you got to hit them because they're in a really tight school. But when you get into them, you can literally sit there for 2 or 3 hours and catch bunches of them. I've never personally witnessed it. I've heard of it so many different times from other people that have witnessed it from a boat and from shore. Every trout I've ever caught from off the beach has always been like one, and it's like, where'd you come from? You know, it's bizarre. The snook have been the weird one. That's the one that's kind of got me a little perplexed. The last 3 weekends, the wife and I have gone out to Boca Grande to hang out on the beach and watch her swim around while I stand guard like the movie Jaws, you know, looking for, you know, whatever. It's kind of funny and entertaining.
It's just entertaining to think about you standing there.
I might get out to my waist.
Do you have your 30-06 with you?
No.
Okay.
No, but I stand there most of the time. Sometimes I'll get in the water. If there's good visibility for 100 yards every direction, I'll get out into my waist, but that's as far as I will go. Last weekend, a manatee was coming along, and I watched a little kid get really scared by it. I'm like, no, it's a manatee. And then it's getting closer and closer. I'm like, I started to say something to the lady next to me because her kids were out there swimming. And just as I was about to say something, that kid jumped. It's like, it's okay, it's a manatee. And mom's like screaming, it's a manatee, it's fine. And he just, brief second of panic, which is what I had, just not vocalized it yet. But there's been no snook that I've been seeing, and I was talking to,
Well, you know, I don't think the kid would have anything to worry about, because in your description, even if it would have been a shark, that brown cloud in the water would have gave him plenty of cover to get out of the area. Yes,
exactly.
Yes. So
I was talking to, Dr. Saslow. He's been out there quite a bit, staying out there, and he's been walking the beaches because he loves to fly fish, to surf for the snook out there on Boca. And he said they're in little tiny groups. They're not cruising up and down the shoreline like they normally are. And I've heard that from a couple other customers up there in the Inglewood Beach area that love to fish out there, because this is the time of year where guys catch an oddball bonefish while they're out there fishing for snook. Every year you hear of the handful of, you know, little one-pounders that are caught. And they're just seeing five fish here, 10 fish here, but they're staying in little tiny groups and they're really scattered rather than moving up and down the shoreline the way they normally do. And there's, it's, I'm just not sure what to think about that with the snook, you know, because you're used to having so many snook out there to see all day long cruising by in little groups, and I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So, anyway, getting out into the deep water of the Gulf, what are we thinking of?
That's getting pretty impressive out there. I'm hearing a lot of really cool stuff. In close, like 3 to 12 miles out, mangrove snapper go into an aggregate. They get into their breeding aggregate schools this time of year. So you'll find that one reef is completely loaded with mangrove snapper, and then another reef will have a whole load of lane snapper. Then another reef will be just a ghost town, and it's just that time of year because that full moon in July is when they really major snapper spawn, and even August too. But the close reefs with the snapper, the porgies, the grunts, a lot of permit. I'm hearing permit scattered from Marco Island all the way up to above Venice from different guys. And they're at the beginning of the year, when April usually is the first of the permit showing up, guys are super excited because they're usually the big ones, the 30 pounders. But none of those really showed up in April. They were all like 15 with a few 20 pounders. The last week, guys have been coming in with 20, 25, 30 pound fish that they're catching out there at some of these near shore reefs. But the guys that are going out a little bit farther in that 25 to 35 mark, they're catching a few gags and a few red grouper that they're working pretty diligently at trying to get their limit because it's been tricky out there. Every one of them are talking about the peanut dolphin that have been moving up to the boats, 2 to 5 pound fish. And then I've also had several reports of guys catching wahoo. One guy got a 40 pound wahoo up off of Venice at M11, I think is the name of the reef.
Yeah.
Another guy caught one out by the Barranto, and he got it up next to the boat and thought it was a king at first because he was just flatlining hoping for a bonita or a tuna or something. No steel leader on. Thought it was a king, wasn't super excited about it until he realized it was a wahoo and kind of panicked and broke it off next to the boat.
Yeah.
So a mixed variety of the pelagic fish starting to move around, which is kind of really cool.
Out around that, over 100 feet of water, if you can find something floating, you're going to find some big mahi-mahi.
Right.
There's also all kinds of other fish, anything floating. And so when you're out there, if it's a reasonably calm day, look for any kind of dipping in the water and head towards that.
It can be as simple as a coconut.
Yeah, a coconut could hold fish. But it's there's some you'll find some debris out there. You know, like 50-gallon drums. I think some of them get knocked off of boats or whatever else. But some of that larger debris out there really holds some amazing fish.
Yeah.
But you got to be able to see that kind of stuff. And yeah. One of the guys I know that does it, I don't know, the boat's 84 feet, and I don't know how high the flying bridge is on it. But
about the same height as it is long.
Yeah, it's just, but that's how he's finding his fish. He's going out literally looking for things to cast at.
Yeah.
So,
and I think the number one thing guys got to realize this time of year is if they want to stand a chance of catching, like, the little dolphin or even the bigger dolphin that show up while the guys are either anchored or drifting out there, the number one mistake that they make is they never have a pole ready. There should always be one pole on the boat that's either just rigged with something as simple as a small spoon or just a hook and leader so you can just throw on a little piece of cut bait and pitch it out to them right away. Because everyone's always just got all their poles rigged up for bottom fishing and nothing for the, oh my gosh, there's a whole bunch of dolphin here.
And it should be a spinning rod.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to, what Robert's trying to say is, I would say a 10 to 20 pound or a 12 to 20 spinning rod, if you're going to use braid, 20 to 30 pound braid, nothing heavier, because you're looking for distance. If you got mono on it, 10, 12 pound test, and use a heavier leader. What's up, Benny? Hang on just a second. Okay, well, we kind of got that done. We had to take a pause. We had guys with problems with their rods and reels, so we're back. And let's just move down towards Ponarasa. What's going on down there in the lowest of the passes in Charlotte Harbor?
Well, the passes themselves kind of getting some mixed reports down there because they've been doing a lot of Caloosahatchee release. So the water's gotten pretty dark down there in the last several days.
What's weird is the amount of algae going out on the East Coast versus what's coming out on our coast.
Yeah, that red, blue-green algae or whatever they're calling it.
Why is there so much going out on that coast versus what's coming out on this coast? Doesn't make any sense.
No, the only thing I can figure is maybe it's a little bit shorter distance to that side.
The Kissimmee River that kind of comes down that side.
Right. You know, maybe there's just a higher amount of nutrients being fed in on that particular end of the lake or that particular part of the intercoastal.
Well,
perfect storm kind of situation.
If you look at the Okeechobee going north and south, and you got, you know, Okeechobee City at the top and then Clewiston down at the bottom, and it's the bottom left or the southwest side is where the Caloosahatchee feeds out, and then going out towards the east coast is about a third to middle up on the east side, so it's much higher up. But I think it's more in line with where the Kissimmee River heads. Doesn't the Kissimmee River dump into the top of Okeechobee?
I think, but I don't know, to be honest with you.
Well, I know there's a river, and I think it's the Kissimmee. It's a big river. But it could be that's coming down the river, but ending up on that side being sucked out. That's why they're having such big fish kills. All that algae, it's only going to live so long over there. And as algae dies, the decaying process takes up so much oxygen, they're just becoming oxygen depleted. You know, there's not enough oxygen left in the water to support life. And it could only be 5-10 minutes a day, but no fish in the world can hold their breath for 10 minutes.
Right, and a lot of people don't realize that because they talk about all these fish kills and like, oh, they sprayed my lake over wherever and all the fish died. You know, they don't realize, okay, yes, the pesticide or whatever, herbicide, doesn't necessarily kill the fish, but the process of the decomposition of the vegetation that it kills is what kills the fish because it can be an instant shock. It's anyone who's owned a fish tank and has watched when they've added new water or anything like that, you'll get these nitrite spikes and ammonia spikes as a tank cycles itself. And when it does that, it can only last, like you said, 10 minutes. But it's enough of a shock because you can't hold your breath for that long, or you can't substantiate or handle a chemical burn for that long. You know what I mean? All those things affect everything, and they just don't. It's very bad.
Yeah, it's bad, and that's one of the things. That's what's causing all the fish to die on the East Coast, up, you know, through
Mosquito Lagoon. Mosquito Lagoon hammered a couple times this year.
Oh yeah, that whole area over there's been being decimated, and the water's just nasty with all that green blue algae in it. It's just horrible.
Yeah.
And they were asking me, you know, what's going on. I said, well, it's pretty obvious. They're just suffocating. Yeah. Well, what do you mean? Try and explain it to them, and then they go, oh, yeah, that sounds right. Because the first questions I always ask is, are there a lot of dead birds? Is there dead frogs? Is, you know, what else died? Or was it just the fish?
Right.
Because if there was somebody dumping poison in the water, it would be dead birds, dead frogs, dead turtles. You would see other life dead. But when it's only the fish, that means it's usually an oxygen issue. There's something that doesn't allow the fish to support life. And it's just basic observation science. You know, you eliminate this, this, and this. Okay, that's what's left. There's a slight chance, the water coming out of there is poisoning the fish. But no, because otherwise the fish in Okeechobee would be dying.
Right.
And the fish in Okeechobee are not dying. So there's no poison in the water. Right. You have to take everything, and you start at the beginning and you work your way through and just ask questions. And the questions are, is there dead fish in Okeechobee? Answer, no. So there's no poison in the water. Is there dead birds, dead frogs, you know, turtles, anything in the area where the fish kills are? Answer, no. So most likely oxygen issue. Now, it's not definitive in the term, but if you're wondering why there's so many dead fish on the east coast of Florida, it's oxygen issues. And the one thing that's so hard to figure out, you would literally have to test it every 4 minutes, 24 hours a day.
Right.
To find out if that is the problem. That's why it's such an unknown thing, why nobody knows about it, because unless you test every 4 minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, how do you know if the oxygen went out of the water for 3 to 5 minutes?
Right.
You know what I mean? And literally, you should be testing every 3 minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That would tell you what the oxygen is, but that's only in that one spot. What if it happened 100 yards down the way?
Yeah.
So if the wind backs off, there's no rain, no wind, there's no oxygen being put directly into the water. And calm, hot days tend to lead to fish kills. We've seen it here in the flats. That's why I'm against push-pull trolling motor zones. I'm in for idle speeds because the outboards wash a lot of that gunk off of the grass. You need that 100, 150 horsepower prop turning to get enough thrust to blow that free, so a lot of it drifts off, so it's not all going dying at the same time and decaying in the same spot. It thatches it out, cleans it out. And I've seen it through the harbor. We have actual proof. We have Ding Darling, where every summer it's a complete dead zone. And if that's the way they want dead zones on the north east side of the harbor, the west side, the Mayaca cutoff, that's what we will get. We will get dead zones if they take the outboard motors off of those flats. Now, I don't agree with people buzzing the shorelines and running around on plane back there, but idling in and idling out, I'm all for it. I think it's the only way to keep life. We don't have enough water sheet flow in Charlotte Harbor like they do in Tampa Bay. Huge mouth of Tampa Bay allows a ton of water to come in and out. We've got all these little passes, and the water comes in and out very slowly on most days, and that's what would cause all the problem. So,
well, we've changed every drainage ditch around, which has changed all the flow from out of all these backwaters too, so you don't have, once again, that pushing water to push across right. The flats through the mangrove systems and all that stuff like
we were lucky.
Used to.
We were having hill tides when we have 11.5 foot height on the Peace River. So we had a big flush coming down. We had big tide changes. Everything was working in favor to get a lot of this gunk out of the harbor. And unfortunately, it just goes from us into the Gulf. But
right.
Gulf's more able to handle it. Anyway, getting back, we were talking about Ponderosa. Any reports on Redfish Pass?
There's been a bunch of snook down there. You know, this is the time of year when they tend to congregate down in there, which is pretty cool. Been some gags being caught down there. A few oddball redfish, especially at night. Some of the guys that have been fishing around the pass at night, you get those big bull reds that are moving in and out of the Gulf and wherever else they happen to hide.
All right, jumping up to Captiva Pass.
Same basic thing going on there, except for I'm hearing more consistent numbers of gags with a couple red grouper of legal size with a whole lot of little pups, which is always kind of fascinating to me when you catch a legal red grouper inshore like that.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Been a lot of tarpon down there moving in and out of the pass and then right just along the backside of all those islands. And those fish are like running in 2 to 10 groups, and they're not huge massive numbers, but I think a lot of guys just aren't talking about it as much because they've been out there. There's been so many weird thunderstorms building right there off of Sanibel first thing in the morning that it's keeping a lot of guys from the beaches and the passes, so you're not hearing great phenomenal consistent reports about it. They're afraid to get hit by lightning or rain.
Gotcha.
Which I don't blame them.
Well, let's go to Pine Island Sound, back on the flats and out in the ICW.
A lot of big trout, and they seem to be in a little bit better, more consistent numbers. You find a little area, and you're catching anywhere from 2 to 10 nice fish in that 15 to 20-inch range, a few oversized like that. A lot of Spanish mackerel scattered throughout there with some oddball bluefish. Good numbers of little sharks, especially down there.
The rocks,
you know, and then there's been some tarpon. The redfish seem to be more concentrated up closer to the little keys and the main island shoreline itself, but they are scattered out there in those deeper potholes.
Okay. Go to the other side, Matt Lachey. A lot of snook underneath the bridges. You got some tarpon up around the bridges, cruising from there up towards north end by Boquilla. We've got redfish north and south of Matt Lachey from the Indian Fields, Ice House Number 2, all the way down to the Ding Darling area there, just kind of on either side of the channels. And coming north up around Two Pines, you're hearing a lot of snook around that area, a little bit of trout, occasional pompano or something outside of the bar. Let's flip over across the way and go to Boquilla.
Boquilla's had a good mixed group of fish, too. Along the shoreline, there's been a lot of snook, some redfish, a few mangrove snapper and pompano kind of cruising along that shore. But once you move out a little bit further in that deeper flat, heading out to those two big sand holes, you're lots of schools of thread fins out there, so you're having some mixed mackerel, bluefish, little sharks, quite a few trout there again, but they're out in deeper water in that 5 to 6, 7 feet of water. And then hearing of some occasional tarpon. I've heard of one cobia this week that a guy saw swim by his boat over there, but he said it was a little guy. And that's about it that I've heard of, but it's just a mixed barrage of stuff.
Okay, and let's do something a little different. Let's hit the deeper spots of the harbor, the Cape Hayes Reef, down through the straits, the hard bottom, up through the deep holes.
Around the Cape Hayes Reef, there's been tarpon hanging around that area, you know, off and on. Been some good mangrove snapper, Spanish mackerel, a few oddball trout and pompano on it. As you move up along the center of the harbor, hitting some of those deeper holes, lots of little sharks. Tarpon are scattered everywhere. They're not rolling as heavy as they normally do. And
well,
I don't understand.
We got to update the map anyway, so we'll go through the whole tarpon thing on the next, on the regular tarpon one.
Okay. 10 million catfish. Lots and lots of catfish out there right now.
Great bait for everything.
Yeah. People don't realize how great they are.
Yeah. They're all so hung up on getting, you know, ladyfish to use for bait that the biggest, most readily available food there, or the most abundant food, I guess is the correct way to say it, is catfish. And they're not collecting catfish tails.
Right.
Take a 5-gallon bucket with you, catch a catfish, throw him in the bucket. When he's dead, chop a big chunk of tail meat out of it, toss it out for bait for the sharks, tarpon, whatever happens to be there.
And even if it's a smaller one, throw the whole thing on there. They eat it.
Yep.
Now, eat it with the fins on it.
Before I do that, I have a pair of diagonal cutters, or dikes as they're called. You know, you think of a, never mind. But anyway, I use those to clip the fins. I take the points off of the, I don't have to clip them all the way down, but I just go within a half inch or so of the fish and go clip, 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 and I'll just leave them hang there. But that way it makes it easier, safer for me, or just get rid of them entirely. And the blunt edge is not so bad. I can grab them, put my hook into them.
Right. It's a lot safer for you.
If I'm going to do that, I usually take some type of leather glove with me, or canvas glove, something a little heavier, just to be safe. But I clip the fins off and put them on, not because the tarpon care, or the cobia, or the sharks, they don't care about those spines.
No.
But for me, I do it for myself.
Absolutely.
One glove, left-hand glove, and Michael Jackson, a bait. I'm out there with one left-hand glove and a, you know, pair of diagonal cutters, and just clip, 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 and stick my big hook through it, toss it out. I would say if it's under 10 inches, that's a good bet. 8-inch to 10-inch range.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's over that, I'm tending to just use pieces.
Yeah.
I use chunks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, coming back up around and coming up the east side of the harbor, I hear a lot of snook up under the mangroves, and the redfish seem to be scattered all the way from just inside of the bar all the way back up underneath the trees.
Yeah.
It could be either or. Now, I'm going to bet with these sunnier days that we've been having, that's going to change, and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to have to find shade and cover to find redfish. But the dark water diffuses the sunlight more, so they may not leave their nice little potholes and ditches and troughs out by the bar to go back under the mangroves. So you got kind of a double-edged thing there with the water so murky. Maybe they're going to go back up under and get in the shade. Maybe they're not.
Yeah, I think you just got to play with it and play it by ear.
But first thing in the morning, I knew I'd be fishing out by the sandbars.
Absolutely.
And then as the sun came up, I'd probably follow it up and look for shade.
Yeah. And I'm also going to kind of look for moving water. That seems to be a little bit more consistent, even though they're scattered all over that whole shoreline from what a lot of guys are saying. It seems like the guys that are catching numbers in isolated spots have all been like right at the entrance of a creek or on just on the edge of the windward side of an island.
Well, anybody who lives in the eastern United States, the Midwest to the eastern, the middle to eastern side, knows if you stand in the breeze, it's cooler. Right. Now, if you live in the western part, the southwest, no, if you stand in the breeze, it's worse.
Standing in front of a blow dryer?
Yeah, you're standing in front of a heat gun. But anywhere in from the Middle East is, if you're in the a breeze, faster moving air, and it's cooler. So the same thing happens with water. If the fish are in an area where the water's flowing more, it's more of a breeze. It is cooler. It's, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 degrees cooler than what the water laying still would be.
Right.
So that's where that comes into play so much.
Absolutely.
That and moves food. So
absolutely.
Getting up around Punta Gorda Isles and the canal systems up there.
Lot of black drum. I mean, it's amazing how many people are talking about all the black drum up in their canals right now. People catching them and people seeing them. And then a lot of juvenile tarpon.
Isn't it amazing how they get so white in the canals?
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like albino type looking fish, and they're not.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's from fertilizer or it's something happens back there in the canals.
I don't know if it's a mating thing or what.
Could be. It could be a mating color. And but literally you see these giant 40-pound drum and they're almost white to white and orange. I mean, it's just weird colors.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
You know, the only reason I'm not sure it's a mating thing is because I see a lot of those colors in a bass in a freshwater lake, in like a golf course or something like
right.
that.
Right, someplace with no structure.
No structure.
Because like as a kid catching all those out in Arizona, they were, the only thing they had was a faint lateral line on them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no real dark back to them, no dark green blotches to
and
them.
Darker water with no structure to hide on, so, you know, that dark, I don't
makes
know.
Makes sense.
No, it doesn't. Nothing about it makes sense.
Well, theoretically it does.
Theoretically, but, yeah, it's something about being back in the back of those canals. Really, you can get these, and they look amazing when you look at them from above and you're standing on a dock or a seawall and you see them swim by because they have those huge pec fins.
Yeah, they're kind of butterfly-ish or angelic-like as they kind of glide by with those fins just wisping along. They're pretty neat.
And it doesn't look anything like the big clumsy drum that, you know, when you get them out of the water you see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a completely different look to the fish. It's so hard to identify. Let's see. Anything at Ponce de Leon? A few drums, some snapper?
Yeah, a few drum, a few snapper. Been some jacks coming through on a regular basis, and some of those jacks have been coming through there have been pretty good size, you know, 6-8 pounders.
Yeah, that means no chance of landing them.
Right. Yeah, not there. Not very easily.
You hook a 6 or 8 pound jack while standing on the dock there at Ponce, I give you a 1 in 30 shot of actually being able to see that fish.
Exactly.
1 in 30 at best. I mean, it's going to go, you know, 200 yards down the canal and wrap around a tree, or it's going to go out and wrap around a marker or something. There, I don't, you know, 4 pounds, 3 pounds, maybe you're going to see. But with a regular, you know, medium light tackle spinning setup, it's that jack is just going to strip everything you got.
Yeah, but it's fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I think they're just a spectacular fish. Anything left?
Not really. I mean, I think we pretty much hit most of the areas.
Well, I think we should put up a tarpon map because everything kind of changed a little bit with the way everything is going. So I think we'll fall back to a tarpon map and then update the Tarpon Talk Radio portion of this. And so I guess with that, you could almost say we're... I think we ran out of things to talk about. People seem to enjoy that. We're done talking. They like it. All right. So I guess now that we're done talking, the producers can start the... there he goes. Okay.
There you go.
Well, this is Fish and Frank. And as you probably guessed, there's only one person this annoying broadcasting. And Robert's in the chair across from me, trying hard to stay awake today. God, it was a rough night last night. I didn't sleep hardly at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just tough. But it was kind of interesting going down and got all the racks designed from the store. We should have at least 600-700 rods available in that store. North Fort Myers, the store is going to be. We don't know exactly when it's going to be open or anything like that, but it is.
It's getting close.
We're working on it. So it's going to be unique. All the regular pirate crew of Bait Bandits will be down there. Jeff one day, Mike one day, Vinny, Robert, myself, everybody will be taking turns going down there and working the store and then coming back up here to work the rest of their shifts. So you will be able to meet the pirate crew in North Fort Myers pretty soon. So anyway, I think that's it. Anything to say, Robert?
No, I think that's good.
All right. Well, bye, boys and girls.